This is the Old Mole Variety Hour here on KBOO. I'm Clayton Morgridge, and I have this commentary about why our social order requires so much state violence to keep it in place. Now, it might seem obvious that any social arrangement that must be maintained by force, by the constant threat and frequent use of violence, is a pathological one. Until one reflects that, after all, we currently and increasingly live in such a society. A family or a community that was held together in this way would call for some kind of intervention by social workers, perhaps. For you would suppose that there was something fundamentally unfair or unjust about the situation, some imbalance of benefits or power that could only be maintained by imposing the will of a minority upon a majority who are ill-served by the arrangement. However, you might instead imagine that the social arrangement was basically fair, but some of the people in it were evilly disposed, seeking always or often to take more than they had a right to. There are, of course, these two interpretations of the society we presently live in. Do we have millions of people in prison and immigration detention centers and so many police killings because of bad people opposing a just system? Or because of an unjust system that screws up people's lives and souls? An article in The Guardian a few weeks ago suggests that it is the system that is at fault, for it details the rapid increase in private security forces around the world and ties this increase to rising economic inequality. In more than 40 countries, including the U.S. and the U.K., there are now more private security workers than public police officers, 232,000 private guards in the U.K. compared with 151,000 police. Quoting from the article, "Around the world, private security guards patrol shopping malls, elite gated communities, and some public streets. From El Salvador to Vietnam, private guards restrict access to walled elite residential enclaves that are cut off from the cities around them. In many cities, guards and metal detectors block entrances to luxury hotels that tower over the extreme poverty surrounding them. Guard dogs bark from behind the high walls and razor wire that have become ubiquitous in wealthy suburbs in South Africa, where in 2015 almost 500,000 security guards numbered twice the country's combined police and army personnel." End of quote. Well, all this increasing security is protection of the rich from the poor. It is necessary for maintaining the expanding inequality of property. The Guardian article cites Professor Deborah Avant, who points to the growing economic inequality as what lies behind all the security. She says, "You have a ton more money than everyone around you, so you want to protect it. Getting security from the private sector is the obvious way to do it," unquote. A U.S. magazine, Town and Country, wrote that fear of terrorism, a volatile political climate, and a pervasive sense that the wealth creation of a few has come at the expense of the many have made paranoia the norm, unquote. The U.S. company Pinkerton explains that its agents protect Fortune 100 CEOs and their workforces, famous entertainers, athletes, high net worth individuals, royal families, and diplomats, unquote. This impression that the legal forces of repression exist to maintain inequality is confirmed by the historical origins of police forces and prisons. The early accumulation of wealth that got capitalism up and running came from gold and silver from Mexico and South America, extracted from the earth by the ruthlessly coerced labor of natives and enslaved Africans. Needless to say, the violent coercion needed to keep human beings enslaved had to be highly organized. The same was true of the production of cotton and sugar in the southern U.S. and the Caribbean. Meanwhile, in Europe, the displacement of serfs and peasants from the land in England and France meant that the cities became crowded with people seeking work in industry. Thus were created what the French philosopher and historian Michel Foucault calls new forms of illegality, activities that were once not very important but are now intolerable in commercial and industrial, that is, capitalist ownership. Foucault writes, "The development of the ports, the appearance of great warehouses in which merchandise was stored, the organization of huge workshops with considerable quantities of raw materials imported from the colonies, and manufactured articles which belonged to the entrepreneurs and which were difficult to supervise, also necessitated a severe repression of illegality. The way in which wealth tended to be invested on a much larger scale than ever before in commodities and machines presupposed a systematic armed intolerance of illegality, especially where economic development was most intense." Unquote. In other words, it called for what Foucault calls the carceral state. Here in the U.S., the development of the modern police force also follows the capture of land, resources, goods, and labor by capital. Christian Williams, in his well-researched book, Our Enemies in Blue, summarizes that history as follows. "Control of the lower classes has been a function of policing at every point since the institution's birth and has served as one of the major determinants of its development. In the South, the police first approached their modern form after a long process of adaptation and experimentation in the official means of controlling the slave population. This mandate was determined both by the demands of white supremacy and by the economic needs of the plantation system, which was an integral part of the capitalist economy. The mechanisms developed to control slaves eventually expanded as slave patrols were charged additionally with regulating the behavior of free black people and that of poor white people, especially indentured servants. As modern capitalism took shape, the new industrial working class posed new challenges to the social order, and the police institution evolved to meet them. Like the slaves, these dangerous classes were marked as permanent objects for police control, and their lives became increasingly regulated by specially designed laws, selective enforcement, and heightened scrutiny." End of quote from Williams. Well, the greater the inequality in any set of social relations, the more coercion it takes not only to defend the haves and all their stuff from the have-nots, but more importantly, to protect the social order from revolution. So it follows that as inequality increases and people inevitably begin to contest their subordination to the rich and the powerful, the forces of coercion will grow in their penetration and intensity. What would it take to dispense with violence as an essential method of holding society together? It is not enough to say that we should reduce inequality to, say, the days when CEOs made only 20 times what the average worker made instead of what it is today, 276 times the average worker's wage. Nor is it enough to have Medicare and free higher education for all, though these are worth fighting for. The foundational inequality is in the control of our lives, of our labor, of the goods and services we need, and of the government, by the owners and executives of capital whose only interest is in accumulating ever more capital and power by whatever means possible. The power of capital versus the power of working people, that is the fundamental inequality and why we need to be actively and creatively thinking about how to abolish the power of capital.